Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 569, of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again by Chad Smart, the host of Out of Touchstone. Chad, how are things going with the Out of Touchstone YouTube channel?
They're going well. I mean, the last week has been kind of, not as productive. Just, you know, I told you off air last week that I had gone to Oregon and got COVID. So Oregon's on my list right next to Canada of places that should be exterminated. Maybe that's a bit too harsh, but I'm working. And then, as I was working on the episode that will come out the same week this episode comes out, which features Father of the Bride 2, we got word that, you know, Diane Keaton had passed away. So now I have to go back and add a little tribute section since she is in Father of the Bride 2. And I actually found out, was reading an interview or part of an interview with her that was quoted in the article about her passing. And she said that Father of the Bride is one of her favorite films that she worked on. So,
oh, wow.
That's a nice little tidbit that I can work in there to promote Out of Touchstone. But I felt bad when I tweeted that she had passed and that she's featured in the episode or in the movie that we were talking about the same week, because it seemed kind of self-promoting at someone else's expense, but that's Hollywood, baby. It's what you do.
I was going to say, this is America, baby. That's what we do. That's what we do here. Well, be sure to check out the Out of Touchstone YouTube channel and follow Chad on social media for updates and all that good stuff as well. Chad, we are going to talk this week about finishing moves, finishing maneuvers. Kind of got the idea from watching or seeing clips and highlights from the latest PLE from WWE, Crown Jewel, emanating from Perth, Australia. We're going to get to those, that discussion in just a few minutes. But last week we started something that I kind of liked, and so we're going to keep moving forward with it. And this is the blind ranking. Oh. Where... You all right there?
Ready.
Okay. If you're watching on YouTube, Chad just put on a pair of sunglasses. So we are going to be blind ranking, or Chad's going to blind rank. I'll weigh in throughout. Finishing maneuvers that have a Halloween name, because it is October. I'm a Halloween nerd. And so all month long, we're going to do these blind rankings with a Halloween twist to it. So that's what this week says. Last week, we did scariest wrestlers. Chad chose Bruiser Brody from the list of five that I gave him as the scariest. So we're going to find out what Chad's favorite maneuver is based on the Halloween-themed maneuver. And Chad, you can go by the name or you can go by the move itself. I don't care how you decide what's that?
I'm curious to see what's on this list because I have nothing in my head right now.
Really? Okay. Well, yeah. I have several that came to my mind immediately. And then I kind of, as I thought more, I put it into ChatGPT, which again was a fail, but I feel like these are some good ones. So we'll find out what your top five is here, blind ranking these finishing maneuvers. And I'm going to start off with the one by JBL. It is the clothesline from hell. Of course, that big lariat style clothesline that he has knocked many opponent out with.
I think that's a legitimate move that JBL has probably used outside of the wrestling ring once or twice, but I'm going to give it a 4. You know, I mean, I like a good clothesline, and JBL does have probably the best devastating clothesline in the last 20, 30 years. But, you know, without knowing what else is on the list, I have to start kind of low. So I'm going
to 4. Okay. That's good. That's good. All right. Next. The Ghostbuster, which is Coco Beware's finisher when he was in the WWE. It's a brain buster, basically. But whatever reason, he called it the Ghostbuster. I don't know why, but it finds its way on our Halloween list of finishing maneuvers.
Yeah, this was tough. Because I'm going to put it at 5 just because I don't think it's really that scary, you know. Okay. But everybody does love busting ghosts.
I don't know why they called it the Ghostbuster, but...
I'm guessing just because... Ghostbusters was popular at the time. Maybe so. But yeah. All right. Hopefully the next 3 are
some. They're good. They're all good. The last 3 are my some of my favorites. So we'll go right now with the Tombstone Piledriver, obviously made popular by The Undertaker. Actually, if you go way back and look, The Rock Don Morocco used it's the inverted Piledriver, but with The Undertaker, it became the Tombstone, and of course, Kane used it, and we're going to talk more about it later, but John Cena used it to finish AJ Styles in that match on Crown Jewel. So where do you rank the Tombstone Piledriver?
I'm going to have to go 1. I think that, you know, just because of the longevity of The Undertaker, the supernatural aspect of Undertaker is probably one of the top 3 Halloween characters that you can put. So yeah, let's go 1 for the Tombstone.
Yeah. And as devastating as it looks, for the most part, it is a relatively safe move. And we saw The Undertaker win numerous world titles with that maneuver. So that's a good ranking for it. Next up is the Frankensteiner, made popular by Scott Steiner, of course, now his nephew, Braun Breaker, using it with a modified twist. I love this move personally, so I'm curious to see where you put it on this list.
Yeah. With Braun using it, should they call it Frankensteiner's Monster?
Perhaps so.
I mean, that's a good move too, and the name is great for the Halloween tie-in, but I'm going to put it at 3, hoping 2 is also very good. But I mean, if I knew these rankings, that might go 2, but just for sake of argument and discussion here, I'm going to go 3.
2 is perhaps the most visually appealing finishing maneuver of these Halloween maneuvers. And that is the Devil's Kiss by Stephanie Vaquer.
I don't know. Maybe because I'm not Booker T or a 14-year-old boy anymore. The Devil's Kiss, I think, is a bit overrated in terms of its popularity right now, just for the
visual.
The visual, yeah. Although, but 2. I mean, 2 fits. So, I mean, especially. I was trying to make a 2 and a booty reference, but
We knew where you were going. Yeah. Friends, let us know your rankings of these Halloween finishers and what moves did we miss? I had Hell's Gate on the list as well, which was the Undertaker's submission move. When it comes to finishers, though, Chad, are you more of a preference of a knock them out, pin them 1, 2, 3, or are you submission? Do you like submission finishers?
I like the ones that take at least 5 or 6 attempts to do or executions of before it can get a 3 count. I prefer a pin to a submission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, and you brought up a good point. You know, in the 80s, Jake the Snake Roberts would hit the DDT and pin his opponent. Chris Adams used the super kick and pinned his opponent after the first one, you know.
Yeah.
Now
Shane Douglas used a belly-to-belly suplex.
Right, yeah. So now a lot of the moves we just talked about are what do they call them? Like setups to move on to the next move. So we've seen the super kick used, Sweet Chin Music, as Shawn Michaels had it in the 90s, but the DDT specifically, one of my favorite, if not my favorite finisher, especially the way Jake the Snake Roberts did it. Arn Anderson had a great DDT, and it was over 1, 2, 3. And now again, it's a transition move, along with a lot of other ones. So is that just part of, you know, product of today's wrestling that, you know, those devastating finishers, and then on PLEs or pay-per-views specifically, because it's not just WWE that does it. We see it from a lot of companies, you know, a wrestler will hit their finish and then hit it again, and then a third time, and sometimes four or five times, and it doesn't finish. It's not a finisher anymore. So are we calling these finishing maneuvers still, or do they need to be called something different because they're not always getting the job done?
Yeah. Sarcastically, I think we need to finish the term finisher and call it more, spam moves. I think it's just the evolution of wrestling where, used to be atomic drop was devastating.
Rick Rude sold it better than anyone.
Exactly. But having a colonoscopy, I don't know where I'm going with this.
a lot of butt humor on today.
I think, and I think for good or better, obviously, I think the athleticism of today's wrestlers is better than what it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But I think there is, and this may be old guy yelling at clouds again, that there is a lack of either selling or that lack of the fact that a finisher isn't a finisher. And if it's not going to finish someone, then why use it as a finishing move?
I don't know. The thing I always kind of chuckle at now, because, like you said, back in the day, and maybe it was because we were watching Superstars, we were watching Wrestling Challenge, WC, or back in the day, Saturday night on TBS. And a lot of those matches, most of those matches were enhancement matches. So yeah, Jake hits the DDT, or Ric Flair slaps on the figure four, or Nikita Koloff does the Russian sickle, whatever the move was, they were doing it to a inferior opponent, in the eyes of the fans. So it made more sense. But even today, in the lead up to WrestleMania, how many times did Cody Rhodes hit the crossroads one time on John Cena and it laid him out at the end of Raw or on SmackDown? But then when they get in there and wrestle, and you would think, okay, he's more exhausted now. He beat him after one crossroads. Right. He laid him out a week earlier on SmackDown with the same move just one time, and he hadn't been wrestling. So that's sometimes, again, old men yelling at clouds. It's like, okay, a week ago, this put him out for 10 minutes while Cody finished his promo. But tonight during this match, he can't keep him down for three. So
it's the adrenaline in his soul.
yeah, exactly. Right. Well, the other lead up for this podcast episode specifically was the match between AJ Styles and John Cena. We've talked last week about John Cena throughout the episode, and we're down to Michael Cole said four more appearances, which I thought it was four counting the Perth show, but maybe they've added something. I'm not sure, but we're nearing the end of John Cena. And then last night or somewhere along the way, AJ Styles officially announced that 2026 will be his last year in pro wrestling. So first I want to start with that and get your thoughts. You've been an AJ Styles fan, you've been aware of AJ Styles. I'm putting words into your mouth that you're a fan of his, but I can remember when I first moved to Southern Illinois in 2004 and come over to your apartment and watch TNA on Wednesday nights, the pay-per-views. You order them every week. You drove to Nashville several times to see TNA. AJ was a big part of that. I don't know what I'm, again, didn't want to put words in your mouth, but
no.
Your thoughts on AJ back then and now today announcing his retirement some 20 plus years later.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's been around for over 25 years, cause he, you know, he was in WCW in the last year. Yeah.
Do you remember him in WCW at all? I had no
recollection. Vaguely. I mean, I remember he was in a tag team with Air Paris.
Mm.
So they, you know, he wasn't getting, I don't think he was getting a push or anything, but
yeah.
You know, had only made sporadic appearances, but I think they had like a cruiserweight tag team tournament that they were in. So I remember there, and then, yeah, when he's the face that ran the place in Impact. They built the company around him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why when Hogan and Bischoff came in and they made AJ like mini Flair and trying to be like, it was like, what are you doing with this guy that has been the face of the company? You know, it's kind of like when DDP came into WWE and they made him a stalker of The Undertaker. It's like, this doesn't fit the character at all that he's built up. But yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of AJ. You know, I didn't see much of his Japanese work. When he was in the Bullet Club, wasn't really surprised to see him show up in WWE because I think most wrestlers at some point want to work the big stage. I know he's had some injuries over the last couple of years and hasn't really done a lot of memorable stuff in WWE over the last couple of years that I can, at least as far as I can recall. But then again, I have a hard time remembering what I had for dinner last night. So I think AJ can still go. And apparently the match with Cena was really good and showed that he still has it. But at the same time, you know, he's in his, I'm guessing, late 40s.
Yeah.
Go out while you're still relatively healthy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he's got, what, 16 kids to play with. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be a shame to see him go. I know he said, I believe he's the one that said that he will not come back even for Saudi money or something along those lines. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he stays away or if he comes back for the occasional one-off appearance.
Yeah. And I want to, you know, down the road, maybe in 2026, we'll go more in depth on AJ Styles. I have lots of thoughts and opinions as well on his career. And I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit deeper on AJ, but we'll get to that again. We'll have plenty of time. Didn't say a date in 2026, but 2026 will also mark 10 years for him in WWE. He showed up at that 2016 Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. So again, we'll do a more deeper dive on AJ Styles and his WWE career and TNA. We both had the opportunity to meet him at that Base Brawl event back in 2011, which was pretty cool. I think you even got a couple of autographs from him for your cousins, on some figures. So, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But both Cena and AJ Styles used a variety of finishing moves from guys who are in WWE, who are in AEW that maybe had influences on them. AJ did the whole TNA throwback from 2005. It was kind of a cool look to dust off and bring back into the action because, like you said, he was kind of one of those mainstays in TNA for many, many years. And I'm curious to know, in your opinion, do you think they would have allowed this look that he kind of threw back to at Crown Jewel if it were not for the relationship WWE currently has with TNA? Or do you think they wouldn't have minded either way?
I don't think they would have minded just the look, you know, because he didn't have anything that, you know, promoted Impact or TNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the style. I think the thing that probably wouldn't have flown, although it's John Cena, so, you know, he might have been able to get away with it, is from, and I don't know if you've watched it, if you can tell me if I'm correct, but from what I read is that Cena gave the ring announcer a handwritten note of how to introduce AJ and called him the embodiment of total nonstop action.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have probably flown.
Yeah.
If there wasn't that agreement. But again, like, it's John Cena's retirement tour. Maybe he would have said, hey, if you're not going to read it, I will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the heat for it, you know,
yeah,
to not get the ring announcer in trouble. But
yeah. And let's talk about that real quick too, because I can't remember, like you said, you can't remember what you had for dinner. Like, I can't remember what all we covered in Cena last week, but we did talk. I do remember likening this to kind of our favorite bands from the 80s or 90s and coming back and playing new hits versus playing the favorites. Obviously AJ and John Cena had some great matches during AJ's run when he finally jumped over. How have you liked the Cena tour, so to speak? Of so far, it's mostly, for the most part, been other than Logan Paul, I think it's kind of been the greatest hits versus the new stuff, if you will. So would you have rather seen someone else on this Cena tour get that spot that AJ got? Because I think this was more of a fan motivated decision. And I think that Cena has had some influence on who he's wrestled in these last few matches, but there was a big outcrying from fans for this one.
Yeah. You know, it's wrestling. So how much do you, you know, if you see something on TV, how much of it is legitimate and how much is staged?
Mm-hmm.
Because AJ, you know, they did not, there was no story going into this match other than, hey, we've fought in the past. We want to have another match. The match was made online with Cena kind of basically saying, hey, I want this match. Paul, give it to me. And the fans chiming in. I would hope that this had been on the plan for Cena. But then with Cena's heel turn in the earlier part of this retirement tour, how much has the retcon of him becoming face again has changed the plans that they had?
Right.
I don't know. And so I think, I mean, we can talk, and I'm sure we will here in a minute, about the proposed final matches for Cena. That the news that came out this past week about who he's lined up, like two of his next four appearances, who they're against. But I think for this match, this was there was no story. There's no real consequence coming out of the match. It's just, I would kind of put this in terms of Bret Hart versus Chris Benoit on the Owen Hart tribute match, mm-hmm. where it was just two guys that are more than likely friends going out and saying, let's have one match just, you know, kind of for us. Let's just go out and do it.
It is interesting. It's an interesting take. You keep saying no story, and I get what you mean by that. But I think in essence, all of this is John Cena's story. So it's kind of him finishing that book. Yeah. But I understand what you mean by, you know, because wrestling, specifically WWE, is very story driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get multiple layers to a chapter or whatever the case may be. We see several matches and then rematches that involve the same opponents. We saw it again with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, mm-hmm. and Seth Rollins finally getting the dub there. But I get what you mean by that. And, you know, these guys, Cena and Styles, like we mentioned throughout several finishing maneuvers, mm-hmm. kind of a tribute of sorts. Do you view it that way? You know, Cena doing the tombstone and finishing off AJ, obviously, but throughout that match, you know, he did Miz's skull crushing finale. He did the Rusev's submission. Is that
back
the
line?
Fight?
Yeah.
The Walls of Jericho. I find it interesting too, because obviously Cena's kind of cherry picking the moves from guys that he had matches with, feuds with, and mm-hmm. with a 20 plus year career, you can't get in the ring and face all of those guys. So I think this is a great way to mm-hmm. kind of pay homage to those who he has wrestled and been in there with. Randy Orton, he did the DDT thing, mm-hmm. and I think he did an RKO as well. The Bray Wyatt Sister Abigail.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it. And we talked though earlier about, you know, doing that finishing maneuver, not being able to finish off. And obviously you can't do six finishers in the same match and get a finish after each one of them. So yeah. I think it's been a good tribute. It's been nostalgic and it makes me feel old as hell to watch this. But AJ, and I can't find the image on Facebook, but I know he did Sweet Chin Music at one point and he did a couple of other moves. I think from some guys that are in AEW or TNA, and you might have more on that.
Yeah, real quick, I was going to say, you know, there's the wrestling logic, I guess, too, that if you're using someone else's finisher, it's not yours, so you don't do it as well as them. So obviously, it's not going to finish someone. You're not.
There you go.
You know,
I like that.
Sweet Ching Music. He's not kicking in the face at the right angle or the right, you know, PSI to get that. I think. In addition to the match, to the moves you mentioned, I think he also did the Kohita Clutch, which is Samoa Joe's.
AJ submission. Did that, yeah.
AJ did that. Yeah. And Angel's Wings, which is Christopher Daniels. And Frankie Kazarian's move, which I didn't realize. I believe Frankie Kazarian and John Cena trained or were coming up at the same time in maybe UPW here in California.
Okay.
So I don't think they were in OVW together, but I saw something where Kazarian had commented on the match and said that he was glad to be able to share the ring with both of those guys during his career. And I mean, obviously TNA, Kazarian, Daniels, Styles had a lot of matches, but you know, and I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday after the match, and I'm with you. I think it's because it's the retirement tour. It is a way to pay homage, to give credit to guys that he's not going to be able to wrestle or, you know, I mean, I think putting him in a 1-versus-10 gauntlet match and letting him go through all these guys, couldn't bury most of them more than they are already, not being used that well on this show. But you know, I think it's perfect. I think it's a good way for Cena to honor those wrestlers. And again, if the championship was still involved in this storyline, I think that would be different, but yeah, I have no issue with it. And from everything that I've read online, a lot of fans are enjoying it. So it'll be interesting. So rumor is Survivor Series, he's going to face Dominic Mysterio, which would be in Dom's hometown of San Diego. Hopefully Dom would put, you know, he'll put Dom over. I don't think the finishing tributes would go well in that match. I don't think it would fit the match. Again, back to storyline. If he's fighting, I don't think it would fit there, but if he's just doing this random match on a, you know, on a show that has, like we said, the only buildup was a tweet saying, hey, I want to fight this guy. So
now we know obviously that Cena had some memorable matches with Rey Mysterio. Would he and Eddie Guerrero have crossed paths? I know Eddie died in November of 2005 and Cena was champ then, but I don't recall if they ever had any meaningful matches. They may have had some stuff in those early Thuganomic days. And I can see you're Googling or checking something to see, but nothing stands out to me, but I'm picturing maybe a frog splash or, you know, doing the whole chair thing. I don't know. I'm intrigued by it being Dominic Mysterio. You had sent something and said something about rumors or whatever, and I had never came across it on social media, so that would be interesting to see and not do Cena in a traditional Survivor Series match. So
just a quick Google search says Cena and Guerrero had a rivalry in 2003, most famously clashing in a parking lot brawl for the U.S. when Eddie was U.S. champ.
okay.
So, Yeah, so that would have been before Cena was really, I think that was like towards the beginning of the Doctor of Thuganomics career. So, I mean, obviously, if he does face Dominic, I would expect some type of, because I think Dominic does, you know, Eddie tributes in a lot of his matches anyway.
Yeah. Well, hell, his whole look is Eddie. I mean, if you had to pick father, between Eddie and Ray, I would definitely pick Eddie as being his dad. The way he's grown his hair out and has the mustache.
Do you not remember the ladder match for custody? Well, yeah. Eddie claimed, you know, I want to see that DNA test. Give me a 23andMe. I'm surprised. You know, if Vince was still around, I would not have been surprised if they dug up Eddie to get a DNA sample to show that Dominic would show Ray that he wasn't the father. And then they could bring Maury Povich in. And yeah. But yeah, I definitely would expect some type of Eddie tribute.
How likely do you think, you just brought his name up, so that's, Maury Povich? I'm going to ask you this. What's that?
Maury Povich? I don't think he's coming back to TV.
How likely, on a scale from 1 to 10, would you think it is that we see Vince McMahon during this farewell to Cena on WWE programming?
Zero. Yeah, I think Vince is, especially with the ongoing litigation, you know, if that somehow got wrapped up and he was cleared, or at least, you know, not convicted of anything, maybe a two, just to throw in. But and I mean, obviously Vince hasn't returned any of my phone calls in the last 30 years, but it just feels like, I don't know if Vince would want to come back to the company unless he's going to be in charge, you know, unless he's got, you know, I don't think he wants to just stop by and see the guys and we'll just wait for his 85th birthday, invite them over and give them another bust.
Well, something that wasn't a bust was when Cena did a tribute to Edge. And we talked about that last week as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the post-show event on Crown Jewel, but almost immediately after Triple H sat down, the fans, because they have the fans kind of surrounding the stage area now, they were chanting for Edge. And then they started singing Edge's theme song. Mm-hmm. And Triple H did a good job of ignoring it. And I think that I say good job because I think had he addressed it either way, positively or negatively, he was going to face some kind of backlash. And I think he's even facing some for not addressing it. But had he made a sarcastic or snarky comment, you know, the IWC would have eaten him alive. And if he would have said, oh yeah, stay tuned, then he would have gotten, you know, accused you know, clickbait. And so he played it pretty cool, at least the clip that I saw. I'm going to ask you this again. Likelihood of Edge showing up, and I don't keep up enough with AEW beyond just the clips I see on social media. I saw of something the other day, but I think it was from a while back. Is Edge still written off of TV right now? Is Cope written off of TV for AEW?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Triple H just said something about the fans have to cope with the fact that they're not getting Edge. But
he did say that, or you said?
No, he should have.
Oh.
That they have to cope. I mean, again, as what I've read online, he's off filming a Disney Plus show.
Oh, yeah.
And will come back. You know, the rumor is that his contract is up either late November, early December, before Saturday night's main event. But I think if that's the case, the last match, you know, he would be available maybe for that last match or the last appearance by Cena, but I don't think you would, you know, promote that with little time frame.
Right.
And I think given that Cena has done the Edge tribute, Cope did the Cena tribute in match against FTR.
We'll call it a day with that.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned, and I think I know who it is, but there's a rumor on the last opponent. Is that Gunther?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supposedly they're going to have a tournament to see who.
Yeah.
And Gunther will win, but I'm kind of.
I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum here. There's just something not clicking there for me with him. And I know, you know, he's probably the most, one of the most decorated as far as his tenure there, being the UK NXT champion for so long. And then he was, wasn't he the NXT or no, the IC champion for, he set the record for that. And then he was world champion for a very long time as well. So I don't know, something hasn't clicked with me with him. I think he's solid, but it's just not there.
Yeah, and I think being off TV the last couple months is kind of like, for me anyway, I mean, and again, back when I was watching, it's just kind of out of sight, out of mind. And I think having him also be Goldberg's last opponent, it, like you said, something just doesn't connect. And I could probably name five guys ahead of Gunther that I would rather see him face, including El Grande Americano.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, when it comes to, well, let's circle back to finishing maneuvers, and we've talked about the Cena stuff and whatnot, but, you know, when we were kids, I mentioned the DDT specifically, probably my all-time favorite finisher. What moves stuck out to you as a kid? You know, would even working at Stride the other night, there were three matches. There were five matches total. Three of them, someone did a leg drop and didn't get the three count. And of course, back in the day, Hogan did the leg drop and that was it. And again, we kind of jokingly said, it's the master of that maneuver or whatever the case may be. But some of the more simplistic moves that you think, oh, that wouldn't necessarily put somebody out. But, you know, that leg drop has become infamous as being a finisher and keeping someone down. So even Andre the Giant, for that matter. What are your thoughts on some of the 80s finishing maneuvers? What were some of your favorites to watch as a kid? Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Obviously, Macho Man's flying elbow.
Yes.
Probably up there. I've said it many times on the show. I wasn't a Hulkamaniac, so the leg drop, I think, was ridiculous. Tito Santana's flying burrito. I don't know. That one just came to me. I'm trying to think of other, the Hart Foundation's heart attack clothesline. You know, we talked about JBL earlier, but the heart attack where, I guess, if you're elevated off the ground and you get clothesline and then fall on your back, that is a little bit more devastating. Here's a not a finishing move. Well, actually, I think some guys did use it as a finishing move, but I'll throw this out to you as a derailment type comment. Drop kicks.
Mm.
If you miss a drop kick, like if a guy moves out of the way, it hurts you, the person throwing the drop kick. But if you connect with the drop kick, it doesn't hurt. But it's the same action either way.
Right. That's an excellent point. I like that. And, you know, you were talking about the tag team thing. Tag teams that had a combined finisher, I think, were always better as well. You know, you mentioned the heart attack by the Hart Foundation, Road Warriors with the Doomsday Device, Demolition with the decapitation, Power and Glory. I don't know what they called their move, but I loved Power and Glory's. Yeah, Hercules would suplex the guy off the middle rope, and then Paul Rummel would do like a frog or a flying splash on top. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some other great tag team finishers, but, as I became older and was kind of working in the wrestling business, if you will, that Doomsday Device to me is scary as hell, because you're basically flipping backwards off of a guy's shoulders and hoping that you don't land on your head.
And I think there are some guys that didn't flip all the way around.
So you got to get that rotation in. But you know, like the Steiners, for example, I think for the most part it was Scott doing the Frankensteiner, so there wasn't really you didn't really need that partner in there. But I think a good tag team finisher, and I don't know what like FTR what theirs is, and
the Shatter Machine.
What is it called?
The Shatter Machine. It's where one guy lifts the opponent up, and the other guy grabs him and pulls him down onto his knee, like hits his knees into the guy's chest.
Okay. Yeah. And then like Arn and Tully, I remember they used the spike pile driver every once in a while, but I don't remember them using that on a regular basis. So Midnight Express, I think they had their, I don't know what they called it, but they would run one from one side and one to the other side and do something. And then the Rock and Roll Express, all I can remember is the double drop kick with them, but they, maybe they did more than that. I don't remember.
I don't know. I'm sure if you asked Ricky Morton, he would give you a 75-minute answer of what they did. Yeah. I saw one the other Dynamite this past week with the reunited Jurassic Express, which I thought was pretty cool, where it's Luchasaurus gives a guy kind of like a suplex, but then flips him to where his back is. Anyway, Jungle Jack Perry then catches him and power bombs him.
Oh, cool.
And so I'm like, I want to see that on a bigger guy than what they were fighting. But because that's another one that seems like one miscommunication and it's going to end wrong. But,
you know, and that's the other thing, too, with finishers or wrestling in general. You know, these guys are sometimes covered in sweat, baby oil, water, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like you said, that human error aspect of it, it's amazing to me. And I'm thankful that we haven't seen more injuries or serious injuries. I mean, obviously guys get hurt and women get hurt all the time, but like the seriousness that you're really in there without a net and no soft place to land, so to speak.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you probably didn't see last night's collision where Kota Ibushi and Josh Alexander were fighting and they were on the top turnbuckle and slipped and Ibushi fell to the outside and apparently broke his leg.
Mm.
And then a member of the Don Callis family came out and started beating him, hitting him in the face. So again, it's kind of like that's when Sid broke his leg and they just continued on with the match because no one realized
the
severity of it.
That was, that was pretty gruesome. Yeah. Well, Chad, is there anything else about finishers you want to mention before we finish this week's episode?
I don't know, but I think if we're going to stay on topic like this, we need to go now for another 5 minutes talking about things, and then we can try to finish again and go again.
Keep kicking out of it.
Yeah. Finishing move. Again, as a fan of current day wrestling, I do enjoy the matches, but I do think finishing moves need to be finishing moves. And even in big matches, I think a finishing move should be, I think instead of hitting four or five finishers, it should be, you go for it, you attempt it and get blocked every time. And then finally, when you hit it, it's impactful.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, it's 2025. We're all in on, we know it's a work and losing to someone on their first finisher attempt, it does not diminish your character, in my opinion, at least. But yeah, I know that there are guys and not to speak ill of the dead, but I think Hulk Hogan was notorious for this, was he couldn't, there had to be some kind of dirty pool going on for him to lose, you know, Yokozuna with the fireball photography. I think the Ultimate Warrior may have been the only guy he put over clean in those days. It's all a part of the show, and we're okay with you losing in an effort to, and I think that might, speaking of finishers not finishing, I think that might have been one of the first instances where I remember a guy hitting his finishing maneuver and it not ending the match. And same with WrestleMania 7 a year later when Savage dropped multiple elbows on the Warrior and couldn't pin him. So,
I mean, Savage should have known. He dropped multiple elbows on Hogan to revive him. So he should know that you get one to pin and two or three to revive.
It gets you rejuvenated. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, fans, we hope you stay rejuvenated and join us for next week's episode, working on something fun again for our blind ranking. And if you have suggestions, let us know. Don't forget about the My123Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. You can make a donation. We'll be talking more about that in the weeks to come as well as we get closer to the holiday season. And we thank you for watching or listening to this week's episode, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.